I'm watching Seinfeld, and I'm like, he does great of those. How can I do those if I'm going to be a comedian or a writer? I don't even know how to write. Or a storyteller. I don't even know how to do stories that funny. Only the Snow White one. Seinfeld! He does really good jokes, and I can't do that much jokes because nobody laughs at me. And I need someone to tweet me. We need to copy him, you need to print it off so I can do each word at a time when I copy. And I need to memorize that so I can do each word at a time. He does great of those. How can I do those if I'm going to be a comedian or a writer? I don't even know how to write.
TBTL!
I love these guys. They make funny with their mouths.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'm not eating at Taco John's. That's spicy stuff.
I think the awkward silences are the best bits, and especially those kind of related to the obvious sexual tension between Luke and Andrew. And I think that's a really important thing that you need to keep in the show.
If there's a better use for the internet, I haven't found it.
All right, here we go, everybody. Hi there, welcome. Good morning. It's time for a Thursday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Is it too early to get a fish sandwich?
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Hi, everybody.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Bellingham got sunshine here on this Thursday morning. The sun is starting to break through the clouds over Lake Whatcom. We have a rare appearance from the pod dog.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
She is curled up on her bed behind me, right here in the studio. She doesn't like to hang out in here very much. I think the sound of my voice when it comes to hosting this show, it hits her wrong. And actually, that puts her in step with the majority of the American people, honestly. But she is here today, which is very exciting for me. Is it possible I threw a little bit of Olive's cat food into Rudy's dog bed?
There is something about the soul of a cat.
So as to entice her to sit there? I don't know. I'm not on trial here, everybody, okay? I'm here to co-host a podcast and bribe my dog to hang out with me, and I'm all out of metaphors. I don't know. Hey, it's episode 2972 in a collector series. Let's just get down to the pre-planned stuff, because clearly this freeform business is taking us way off track early on.
Let the fun begin.
Interesting article in Vox today about, first of all, the question of if it's okay, I guess, to reread and rewatch and re-listen to things over and over again, as opposed to branching out. Harry Potter, course. The Harry Potter books are the best-selling book series of all time. And there are people who are, in fact, my daughter was one of these people in her teenage years, who are just constantly in the process of reading the Harry Potter books. And there's a certain amount of pushback on that, saying, well, guys, we should be reading and experiencing new things. But there's also some science behind why it's good for us to reread and re-listen to and rewatch things. It makes us feel safe in the world.
I feel myself.
And happy of ourselves. So we'll take a look at what's going on with that. Also, it's a Thursday, a.k.a. a Blurs Day, so of course, got some Blurs Day messages. And we have this guy on the line, the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace and their majesty. He is a soulful rocker from New Hampshire. And he never misses a sausage fest. He is Andrew Walsh, and he's joining me right now from Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. I told Genevieve I wanted to start a blog this morning, but I don't have any good ideas for it. Do you want to help me brainstorm?
Blog?
A web blog, yeah. Just like a place where I can kind of share.
I got one.
Yeah.
So it's a web blog about how about the clothes that we decide to wear and where we get that inspiration from, how we develop our personal sense of style. I'm thinking about this because I have on, currently still, by the way, because I'm living my best life, I have on a t-shirt that I was also wearing last night. And it is, to say this is an afterthought is would be an understatement. This is a shirt that is barely even a shirt at this point. It is something I use for jogging. It lives in a, I have a little kind of cabinet or something in the mudroom that Carrie set up for me with like my running shorts and shirts and things. It says it's a kind of, I don't know what color blue it is, but it has a picture of a very hippie looking guy on the cover, almost like a skinnier Jerry Garcia, long flowing hair and a beard. And it says Dr. T-Cell. And this is a picture of a doctor who is involved in cancer research. And I believe I got this t-shirt when I was hosting an event for Fred Hutch Cancer Research Center. Now, I put it on yesterday. By the way, does it sound like good blogging stuff so far?
So far, I'm writing it all down. Talk slower.
Okay, good. Okay, sorry. So I put this shirt on yesterday because my plan was to go for a jog. Now, the fact that I'm still wearing it today would just tell you that I clearly didn't make it out for the run yesterday. But as I was lying in repose on the couch last night watching All In with Chris Hayes, Carrie came home from work and she...
That's my wife.
She did the rarest of things. She complimented my physical appearance. She said, "You look cute." And I was like, "What have you done with my wife?" And she was like, "No, that blue is a good color on you. I think you look good in blue." Now, I've never heard that from anyone. That's not a thing that I thought was like my look. Again, this t-shirt that I'm wearing is ridiculous. But I had the thought last night, I need to figure out what color this shirt is, and I need to slowly migrate my wardrobe towards all things that are this color, based on one errant comment from my wife about me looking cute.
Here's my question. Does that make you a winter? If it's the blue that you're wearing that compliments you, it means you're probably not a winter because that would be too much kind of palish and bluish, right? Maybe does that mean you're a summer or an autumn and the blue is offsetting that? What do we know about fashion and color and
nothing.
How many people
I know,
are destroying
even the blues I'm wearing,
their phones
you're
right
hooked
now.
And you can't stop staring. I know that much. I often make a joke about being a winter or a summer or something, and I couldn't even begin to tell you what the actual parameters of those things are, like what makes someone a winter, what makes someone a summer. Of course, even as I'm saying this show, we're recording it, it's not going out to the world live, but somehow I'm sure between 10 and 20 listeners are sensing a disturbance in the force and are composing emails to us right now, mm-hmm. Andrew, explaining in depth what makes someone an autumn or a summer or a winter.
Will you do me a quick favor?
But I couldn't tell you.
Because I'm on colormepretty.co. And
oh, shit, that was my idea for our blog name.
We'll get
Is
dot
biz still
yeah,
available.
We'll get dot pizza. Okay, so step one: determine whether you're a cool or a warm type. There's a foundation test where you have to put a dab of pink based cream foundation on one cheek and yellow on the other. But you don't have the materials to do that right now. You have a gold silver test.
I probably
test.
Do. Honestly, we've talked about my skin
That's
issues.
True.
I probably have that somewhere buried in my DOP kit.
I think there's the third one's going to be easier. But just to make sure, you don't happen to have like within reach of you and your microphone right now, a silver-colored and gold-colored piece of fabrics, do you? Or like one of each?
Oh, always.
You do?
How do you do the show?
You just draped in velvet like George?
Yeah.
I have,
you know how, like, you've been here, you've seen it. You know like how Steven Tyler mm-hmm. of Aerosmith has hundreds mm-hmm. of scarves mm-hmm. tied to the microphone stand. That's almost exactly the scene in here, except a lot of the scarves are gold. There's some gold lame involved. I have all of that stuff ready to go.
You know what Steven Tyler has dabbled in?
Music.
Scatting. Is there any good Steven Tyler
yes.
scatting out there?
Yes.
Here, let's try this.
Yes.
Let's just all roads. Here, this is from 60
yeah.
Minutes.
7-8 months, okay. Yeah.
Scatman's World.
We write as we're going, you know.
Yeah, it's a cool process.
So this is he's in the studio with, it looks like, some producers and some journalists. This is only a minute long, and it says Steven Tyler scatting for a song. So I got to believe this is going to pay off at some point, but this is what
I'm
we're
sure
seeing.
It will.
It's a real 60-minute shot.
There's a fair amount of scatting in Aerosmith's
song. Yeah.
Do you know what I
oh.
mean? Like, there's stuff that makes it into the final recording, so you know this guy is into it.
Yeah, so let's hear.
Start with the germ. Steven acts like the mad conductor. He goes out in the middle of the room at the piano,
surrounded by the band. The band plays live around him. And he's just talking into everybody's headphones. And everybody's listening and they're all playing. And it's great. It's great.
And instead of, you know, obviously I don't have lyrics or anything. Or
here we
any
go.
Melody
here we go. Here
at
we
the
go.
Time. And go. I just talk into the mic. And I scat. And I make stuff up.
You scat?
It's better than La La La.
Yeah,
we haven't done that yet. La 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 la.
Okay, yeah, maybe. Is that all we're going to get from the scatting? That was a
debatable.
Long climb.
Well, a couple things on this. Scatting is weird to me because I love it if it's Louis Armstrong. I love it less if it's, well, I certainly love it a lot less if it's Kim Cattrall. Like, to the point where you played, was that yesterday?
I think it was yesterday's show, yeah. Kim.
The intro was famously on our program and really famously on the internet. I love that they sent Lara Logan to do the Steven Tyler interview for CBS. Lara Logan, noted war correspondent. They figured she's seen some shit.
Yeah.
She'll be able to handle Steven Tyler's general vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, when you played that Kim Cattrall thing yesterday, I find it so funny, but it makes me deeply uncomfortable and embarrassed. There is something about the soul of a scat.
Mm.
Wow.
Mm.
That just happened. That was magical. There is something about somebody scatting. It is so vulnerable, I guess, because it's just making up nonsense words that it makes me feel embarrassed for the person. Again, oddly enough, not like Ella Fitzgerald, not Louis Armstrong. I don't know if this is something that it to me is somehow based on someone's race. I don't know what it is, but for like Steven Tyler and Kim Cattrall, them scatting makes me feel really embarrassed.
I'm not joking. Where does Scatman John fit into that? Is it a different kind of joy or embarrassment or what? What are you getting
Scatman
from that?
Scatman John is on, like, you know, that's a really good question. There is something about Scatman John's total commitment to it and the fact that his whole persona is sort of wrapped around the idea of scatting. It doesn't make me feel – I feel embarrassed for Scatman John for like other reasons when I watch his videos, but it's not the scatting – for some reason. And like, I mean, this whole thing, do you realize this whole phase of our show, which may ultimately prove to be the thing that takes us down, which would be so interesting. You know, they say it's not the mountain that defeats the man. It's the pebble in his shoe. And maybe the pebble in our show's shoe will be my obsession with scat. But do you remember how this all started like 2-3 weeks ago?
It started because I think Chris was on the show, and I always associate Chris Hayes with scatting, as does everybody. And so I think we were just looking for a song to bump in with, and I typed in Scatman. I thought I was going to get Scatman Crothers, but instead I found Scatman's World.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, so good. It's not the thing I was thinking of. I was thinking it somehow got into the show. You're exactly right. That's how it started. I was thinking it was because we were talking about Picnic Shelter Number 5. And then they started talking about Lou Bega. Then started talking about Mambo Number 5. Like, I don't know if Lou Bega actually scats in that song, but I think I would allow it with Lou Bega also. This may be something that is somehow tied up in race for me, which is sort of odd, I guess.
But wait a second, though. Lou Bega is connected here. I'm wondering, do you know that Scatman John and Lou Bega? It sounds like I'm laughing because I'm setting you up for a joke. This is the truth. Scatman John, one of his most famous tracks on Spotify is a collaboration with Lou Bega.
Hmm. I am not surprised to hear that because I think that there's probably pretty big overlap in their careers. But as I was listening to the intro to the show yesterday, I felt physically uncomfortable listening to Kim Cattrall sing nonsense words, and it's also why I'm a horrible improviser, because to be good at improvising, you have to be okay with failing. You know, in a very public way, if you try a joke or whatever and it doesn't work, it's very embarrassing to me. I think for me, if I had to scat in front of people, that would be probably the hardest. That would be like if people have OCD, sometimes they do something called exposure therapy, you know, where they expose you to the worst version of the thing that you have the most anxiety about. And then what you learn over time is that your body calms down a little bit. You know, they have you put your hand on a toilet seat and you're really freaked out, but then eventually your level of being freaked out goes down. I think for me, exposure therapy around my being embarrassed is generally, I think that the most intense kind of exercise in exposure therapy would be scatting in front of people.
Do you think, first of all, really quick aside, this Scatman Lou Bega collabo is new. It's from this year. And of course, Scatman John is no longer with us, so this is actually Lou Bega. He must have remixed it. It's called Scatman and Hatman. I'll play it for you later, but I haven't even listened to it yet. but it's amazing how everything is kind of coming together.
Does this mean that there is a chance of us getting a Scatman hologram at Coachella?
What about at the Thing Festival? I'm going to check that schedule again. We're not going up against Scatman and Hatman, are we? I want to say, do you think there are many insecure scatters? I mean, I don't want to overly generalize because, I mean, there must be somebody out there who's probably very insecure and their way of dealing with it is going out in front of people and scatting like maybe some comedians. But I would guess that
the John Tavners.
Right. It's that
Patriot too. He has to scat sing about the missions he goes on.
About the missions, which would be better because nobody would know what he's saying.
But
you would guess that there's probably a strong correlation between self-confidence and scatting because it seems like you need a lot of self-confidence to go out there and do that. You can be meek and mild and sing a folk song about your feelings. But if you're going to go out there and scat, you have to have a lot of, big energy.
Yeah. You have
big
to be
scat energy. Steven. Sorry, is what I was trying to think of.
Sure. BSE.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway, back to our web blog. I think it should be about scatting and about if blue is the right color for me to wear, if that's because here's the thing. I always thought I had heard somewhere that a green was a good color for me because my eyes there's some green in there apparently. By the way, that's something. I was reading an interesting article in the Washington Post yesterday about a writer for the Washington Post, and she suffers from face blindness.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a fascinating piece about what is a very real condition. I certainly don't have that, but I definitely have eye color blindness. I couldn't tell you what the color of anyone's eyes are, maybe with the exception of my brother-in-law, Josh, who owns the fabulous restaurant Pollo Bravo in Portland. Everybody, please go there. He has very blue eyes. Other than people who have like arrestingly blue eyes, I couldn't tell you anyone's eye color ever. And I find it interesting because there are people who really, they're like, oh, he has, there are people that notice that. They notice eye color a lot. I really don't, but I guess there's some green in my eyes. And occasionally when I would wear something green, someone would say, that brings out the green in your eyes. So I filed that away under the good color for me is green.
And then the person said, please now, sir, get off my bus. Do me a favor. Yep. Hold out your two arms in front of you and look at your veins, at like your wrist.
Already doing it.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Of course. This is how you do the show. There's a big scat energy.
I'm trying to push my comfort zone. That honestly made me sweat. Just that joke I just did, I feel flop sweat forming from that. 2 seconds of joke scatting.
Chasing,
I'm not kidding.
Okay, dogs. I'm looking at your veins. Are they more greenish or bluish?
Well, I'm gonna do it out of the light.
I think I'm more bluish.
I can't tell. There's too much skin between the outside and my veins. I can't tell what
mine look blue. So it says green veins mean you're a warm, and blue means you're more of a cool. And then once you know that, then you can start building your color palette around that.
Okay, wait a second. What does plaid mean? Go to a doctor?
Yes.
Oh, man. Plaid man's world.
Scatman's world.
See, all of these are good show titles. I'm just concerned that we are literally averaging 3 out of 5 shows. If we do 5 shows a week, 3 out of the 5 shows are some sort of take on Scatman's world. And I am wondering. Yet I still have, of all of the pushback I've heard on bullshit we do on this show, so far, all I've heard from people is, don't worry about the Scatman's world stuff. It's still working for me. So thank you, listeners.
You know what else people are saying? People are very into, which is the Walshelm Scream. I have seen emails. Somebody emailed us yesterday, literally said the Walshelm Scream is giving me life.
Yeah. I think I saw
People are not tired of that either. And it's In fact, I would say it's got to, it has to be maybe three or four messages we've received from people who have said something along the lines of, I've been having a tough week, or I've been having a tough time, and listening to you guys play Scatman's World and the Walshelm Scream has really kind of like put a little wind in my sails. What a strange world we live in where that is something, and I mean this in the most appreciative way. It is amazing that's something that it can help people, and I'm really happy about it. I'm really glad for it. And also I'm glad because I love playing Scatman's World and I love playing the Walshelm Scream, so I'm glad people aren't sick of it yet.
I hope that my post-podcasting career involves me going around with boombox on my shoulder, blasting Scatman John, going around doing the the Walshelm Scream to people who are feeling blue. Like, I'll just be like your therapy, Andrew.
Don't do that. You'll be like Rick Riz when I saw him at Swanee's wearing a leather Mariners jacket in, like, January. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Rico, my man, this is not the time for it. Like that, I know I've told the story before, but that bar used to be where the Mariners would always go, like after the game. And so it was where, and there's a comedy club downstairs, which is why I would go there because I was trying to become a stand-up comedian. And one time I had been just done some stand-up comedy on a, you know, probably bitterly cold January night. And I come upstairs. There's nobody in this upstairs bar except old Rico. Rick Riz is there, and he's wearing a Mariners jacket. And it's very much like a, well, this is where people, this is where the Riz appreciators are. And I was mm-hmm. like, oh, buddy, that's going to be you, Walshelm, screaming up right. and down the street in 7 years.
Well, I wouldn't. I mean, honestly, I didn't say that like I would be doing it self-servingly, like it's my only claim to fame. I was hoping that I would be doing it more as, like I say, like I'm your therapy, Andrew. If you're feeling blue, I'll come. It'll be a private little thing. Like maybe I just like the idea of instead of having people come to me that I'm out there, mm-hmm. you know, walking the streets, walking the roads of the world, really, and going where people need me and just, you know, spreading the word of my scream and Scatman's words.
Can we get you a vest? If you're now a therapy Andrew, do you get an orange vest?
Yeah, I should.
I had a thought. Listen, we have listeners out there who have therapy animals, and I'm sure that in most cases those therapy animals are 100% legit. So just putting that out there. I had a thought yesterday because, you know, next week, Andrew, you and I, well, first we're going to the Thing Festival. Everybody, please, if you're there, come see us. Do not see Japanese Breakfast, which I just found out is not only delicious, but is a band that is opposing us on the schedule. Come see us. Talk to Chris Gethard in the Wheeler Theater. But anyway, we're doing that. And then we're going directly to Minnesota, where we're going to be at the Minnesota State Fair on Wednesday at 1:30 local time. And so we're going to be gone. We're going to be out there for a while. And I was thinking about this yesterday because Carrie now works, you know, at a minimum of 5 days a week at this new job of hers. And it means that the pod dog, if I go out of town for a week, now we got to figure out what's going to happen with the pod dog. And I legitimately had the thought, could I just become one of those people? It's, you know why? It's because of Halt Dogs. Mm. It's because we're on our other podcast, Macmillan Men, where we talk about the Amazon Prime show Patriot. We've been talking about this Halt dog, which is a service animal. And I don't think I need a service animal, but I want to bring my dog places. And I legit had the thought last night, maybe I should just, I don't know, what do I have to do to make Rudy a service dog? And then could I become one of those people? Could I just bring Rudy everywhere with me? Could that be a thing? Carrie said that Rudy would be exposed as a not trained dog within seconds of us entering an airplane or any other public space. And that's pretty true. It would be pretty obvious that this was not an actually trained service animal.
Yeah, I don't want to be cruel. And you know I love that goddamn dog. But I think she'd blow
her. Oh, I have a picture of you and that goddamn dog that I want to send you.
Oh, one I haven't seen?
You probably have seen. It was a show pick. I was looking for something and I found this picture. It's you and Rudy. And it is so adorable. I think we were on our way to a summer picnic at Chateau Saint-Michel, maybe?
Oh, okay.
And Rudy was in the back of space car.
Yeah.
And it is such a – it is such a cute picture. We should almost make it today's show pick, even though it's like
– Well, I want to see that Dr. T-Cell shirt. Isn't that what your shirt says, Dr. T-Cell?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dr. T-Cell. No, you're right.
When you said that, I started Google imaging – looking for that because I wanted to see what it looks like so bad, but nothing popped up immediately. So I definitely want to see that shirt.
Okay, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. I'm going to take a picture of my Dr. T-cell shirt.
Okay.
I'll send it to you, Andrew. And then I'm going to figure out how to not have my body in the picture.
What I can do is it can be like your shirt. Then I can Photoshop Rudy's head coming out of the shirt. So it looks like.
All right.
What
picture
is
of it.
All that sound? You have a little timer that's on your.
That's the on a Mac. That's the photo booth. That's the photo booth function.
Oh, my God. I thought we were having a fire drill or something. Wow.
Yeah, we're having a fire
drill.
Okay, let's take a break. I'm going to send you this picture, and then when we come back, we'll do some donors of the day, some blurs days, and we will talk about the rereading of things. So stay with us. This is TBTL. So this is Japanese Breakfast. This is the band that we're going up against on Saturday. I like how nobody's framing it that way except me, I guess. Like, it's not a competition. But honestly, this actually sounds kind of good. This has got some Mazzy Star vibrations going on.
Do you think if we play enough of this, though, do you think it'll get it, like, then people can be like, oh, yeah, no, I've heard plenty of Japanese Breakfast. I'll go to the TBTL stage instead.
I mean, it'll definitely be a copyright violation, so we have that going for us.
Good. Then I'll just swell the music and we can listen to the full album. How does that feel?
Good stuff. Hey, have you received your Dr. T-cell photograph yet?
Oh, let me check the transoms here. Okay, I got something here. That is a dead ringer for Jerry Garcia. I would expect to be Jerry Garcia, absolutely. I actually really like that shirt. I really
I
do.
I could probably get you one.
Could you really? Or was that from a fundraiser from a long time ago?
It was from years ago, but I could ask my friends if they have any extra Dr. T-cells.
That's a really cool design. I like it. Yeah.
And that's a real guy. He's a very like quirky but super brilliant researcher who was being honored at this thing. So, yeah. And apparently that's my color, Andrew. Jeez Louise, I'm nipping out hard in that picture.
Are you?
I suffer from small nipple syndrome.
Oh, there they are.
And also, like, whatever. I don't want to get too personal and physiological, but there are very few pictures of me if I'm in a t-shirt where you cannot see my nipples poking through, which is not a great look.
Should I, like, blur them out like it's Instagram or something? Or should I put, like, those Instagram stickers over top of them? Just like XXX.
Yes. Something, anything, please save me from my body. Let's thank some donors of the day. These people are donating to TBTL. They're making the show possible. And I love this lineup today, Andrew, because it is heavy on the Lukes.
I saw
Luke Waters, Seattle, Washington. Thank you, Luke Waters. Keith Brewster of Chardon, Ohio. Oh, yeah. Keith was getting at me when I was doing that surprise wedding TV story because that was in Chardon, Ohio.
Which is east of Cleveland, right? It's kind of like
yes,
kind of the east side there.
Yeah. It was this very beautiful local park in the county. The county there has an odd name. It starts with G. I can't ever pronounce it, but there was a special park where this wedding was in Chardon. It was lovely.
Was it Geauga? Is it Geauga County?
Yes, okay. It was. It exactly was. Melissa Carr of Painesville, Ohio.
Wow. A couple of Ohios in there.
Yeah. Jennifer Evanoff of Chicago, Illinois. Nice. Boy, we've got a strong Midwest contingent here in the middle. We've got Chicago, Illinois. Then we have Morgane Gilchrist Scott of Middleton, Wisconsin.
Nice.
We had Janesville, Wisconsin the other day.
Which, by the way, a lot of people writing in, it sounded familiar to you, people claim, because that's where Paul Ryan is from originally. Do I have that right? Yeah, it's Paul Ryan, I think.
Yeah. I think I've blanked that out. Mm. I think if I knew where Paul Ryan was from, I think my brain has said, let's move that information to the back and let's free up some space for episodes of Patriot or something.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have, and it's Morgane, right? I'm sure this comes up every year because I know Morgane has been donating for years, and we really appreciate it. There's an E on the end there.
Yes, and also you said Gilchrist, and I was wondering, is it Gilchrist?
I think
I was wondering if
right.
you knew something I didn't know.
Right, Gilchrist. How could I screw that up?
Mm.
Gilchrist or Gilchrist?
Could be Gilchrist, yeah. Ooh, this is nice.
Or Gilgane? Ooh, yeah, this is good.
You know, she says love
Did
me sexually.
Did she say love me sexually?
Yeah, you know.
Love me like someone else's wife.
Yeah, I say that to Genevieve.
Are you
going to
go see that
like
kind of smut talk?
Yeah.
On Saturday, would you? I mean, that's honestly, that is perverted. I don't need that kind of gutter talk in my life. I'm turning into Dale Baskets now. All of a sudden, I'm watching way too much Baskets. Also, Luke Hertel of Wakefield, Rhode Island. It's a two Luke kind of day. Thanks, Luke. Thanks, Morgane. Thanks, Jennifer. Thanks, Melissa. Thanks, Keith. Thanks, other Luke. We really appreciate it. We would not be here doing the show without your donations, so thank you for making this possible.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Well, by the way, I would probably go see that band, that last song you're playing, despite its smutty lyrics. That was really good. That was really working for me. So I guess we had a good run. Probably going to be empty on Saturday.
Did we?
Starting at 4:30. Well played, sir. Well played. There's an article by Rebecca Jennings in Vox today in defense of reading the same book over and over again. She goes on to talk about, she mentions the Harry Potter thing at the top. It's best-selling book series of all time. And then she talks about there was a movement on Twitter that I guess I wasn't really familiar with. I am, other than books that I have to read for work, I am not a reader of books the way that I wish I was. And so maybe that's reflected in the kind of Twitter verse that I live in. There was a kind of a movement called Read Another Book, I guess, that was going on for a while. And it was sort of people on Twitter trying to get other people to stop just like rereading Harry Potter and start reading other works. And then Rebecca writes in this article about the idea that also there was a pushback on Game of Thrones. People, she says, during the last season of Game of Thrones, a war online seemed to break out between people who argued that liking a popular show wasn't a personality and those who retorted that disliking a popular show wasn't a personality either.
Mm-hmm.
There were people, online saying that we need to expand our horizons a little bit as consumers of things. She goes on to cite this, research paper from 2012 on the subject of why we seem to like rewatching things and rereading things and re-listening to things. A 2012 research paper, Andrew, which this sounds like it comes straight out of a Macmillan piping manual. The study was called The Temporal and Focal Dynamics of Volitional Reconsumption, a Phenomenological Investigation of Repeated Hedonic Experiences.
But at the end of the day, it's just
dynamics
about
of
A to B, getting things from A to B.
Yeah. The Temporal and Focal Dynamics of Volitional Reconsumption, a Phenomenological Investigation of Repeated Hedonic Experiences.
Wow.
Which Rebecca writes is a long way of saying watching or reading the same thing over and over again. This is why, apparently, we like to do this. Humans are nostalgic creatures, and we like to revisit things from our past. There was a study out that showed subjects who were exposed to popular songs from their youth were more likely to report feeling that they were, quote, loved and that life is worth living. Also, we were talking about a book like Harry Potter or a series of books like Harry Potter. We know how Harry Potter will end. When I read this, I thought, I actually don't, even though I saw all the movies with Addie, I actually don't know. I mean, I don't know the ending of Harry Potter. I've seen it portrayed on film. I just don't remember it. I assume it's a happy ending. Things are okay. But let's just take it as a given that most people know how it ends. Or the point being, when you're consuming something, when you're re-consuming something that you've already read or watched or listened to, you know how it ends, right? And more importantly, we know how the ending will make us feel. This is called experiential control. And that stability acts as a salve for the increasingly unstable traditional points of social and personal fixity. In other words, the fact that we can control how this experience is going to go because we know how Harry Potter ends makes us feel like we have control, and it makes us feel like we're safer in the world.
It reminds me a little bit of the spoiler study that we talked about years and years ago that I think has come up from time to time. Because I'm a pretty, like, anti-spoiler guy, or at least I think it. I am. Like, I don't like it if somebody ruins the ending of something that I'm watching. Genevieve, I think, will walk right up to... Genevieve would say I'm a big baby when it comes to... Pardon me. When it comes to spoilers, because, you know... If I'm reading a book, and, you know, think about it from her perspective, she reads a book in a week, and then I grab it, and I read it, and it takes me like 8 months to read the same book, and I keep talking about it, and so I'm inviting it, right? And then she'll be like, well, have you gotten to the part where everything blows up? And I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, dude, come on. So anyway, you could make the argument that I'm a big baby when it comes to spoilers, but there was that study that said, actually, spoilers do not decrease enjoyment of stories, and I can't remember how they did the study, but it actually, in some cases, would increase enjoyment, even if the front of your brain is kind of like, damn it, it's ruined. But actually, some people said, like, I think maybe it took away some anxiety about the story, and it actually did not lead to a decrease in enjoyment. And I think about that a lot. When something is spoiled for me, I might be mad in the moment, but usually it's kind of like, oh, well, there's like maybe a small part of my brain that says, well, how are they going to get from where they are now to that ending that I now know?
I think I'm I vaguely remember us talking about this, but I don't know what I said about it back then. But I do think that if something gets spoiled for me, I'm probably less likely to engage with it, because I do genuinely – I very much like the experience of I'll give an example. Carrie and I power watched this show called Dead to Me with Christina Applegate and Linda Cardellini.
Oh, yeah. And something that's spoiled for me. Because Genevieve kind of had that on, so I know the big reveal.
So I have to say, I mean, I thought it was I thought it was actually a really good show. We just put it on to see, like, well, let's see what happens with this. It was, we went in with pretty low expectations and then got pretty drawn in. And there's a pretty big twist that I wasn't expecting, and it got me, and it created, like, you talk about a, I guess you would say maybe a endorphins release or something. Like, part of my strong positive association with the show is related to that moment where I was like, oh, damn, that's that's what that was. So that kind of thing for me, if something has already been spoiled, I know what you mean. There's a certain you become interested in it maybe in a different way, maybe just in a from a like, OK, how are they going to, like you said, get from point A to point B? But that moment of me being, which is weird because you think then I'd be just like obsessively trying to watch every M. Night Shyamalan thing out there. Like, I haven't even ever seen The Village. I know the reveal on that movie, The Village, but I've never actually seen it, because I think there's something about, like, the M. Night Shyamalan stuff. It's too much trying to be like you're waiting for the reveal, because that's the whole kind of gimmick. When there's something that I don't really know there's going to be a reveal, or something that is quite shocking to me, when there's something like that, what I don't know that's going to happen, and then it happens, like with that Dead to Me show, that makes a really strong impression on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I'm having the opposite kind of reaction with that show, because while I say that I'm a baby when it comes to spoilers, I've also entered this realm of having kind of different tiers of television. The television I'm not paying any attention to at all when it's on in the room. Sorry, Star Trek, Next Generation, or whatever the heck it is Genevieve's been watching with laser beams. That I will just totally block out. Then there's the stuff that Genevieve's watching that looks good. Like, I would like it, but I just don't feel like getting into a show right now. So I'm happy just to have it on and pay very casual attention to it. Watch it, you know, maybe see a scene here, see some good performances. And that's what it looks like dead to me is. Like, I was in the room and I was really enjoying it and thinking, down the line, I will probably maybe on an airplane or something really binge this and get into it. But I'm also knowing that I'm not going to put blinders on and try to protect myself so that I can save this gem of a show later. I've just kind of gotten comfortable with this mid-level of TV that looks good and interesting, but if it's spoiled, eh, that's fine. I'll still enjoy it later. Then the stuff that I don't want spoiled that I pay a lot of attention to, like Legion, which, I don't know, man. I can't get into season 3. I need to start over.
Really?
I think. Yeah, it's just, yeah, well, whatever. It's still beautifully made, but just, you, I don't know. It better pay off. Let me put it that way. Genevieve finished season 3. Whoa. She likes it. But it's just like, it's so arty now that they better not lose the... There were several plot things that just kind of didn't seem to go anywhere. And it was like, wait, did you just do that because you wanted to make something that looked neat? Anyway, it does look neat, though. Anyway, there are those levels of shows, too. So going back to Dead to Me, like, that's a show that I know what the big reveal is. I know it's a good show. I think it's a show I'm going to watch at some point. But it doesn't bother me that I know what the big reveal is. I still think I'm going to enjoy it. I've really changed this conversation, though. This isn't really what we're supposed to be talking about.
No, but I'm glad to hear that because, honestly, we live in this world, you know, the way that we consume media, the way media is released, particularly TV shows and stuff, it's like it's hard to make your way through this world without getting stuff spoiled. And so if you can kind of just like make peace with it, you're going to be happier than being one of those like,
yeah.
And by the way, that's also my scat singing. Do you have a song that you sing? Do you have a song that you sing when? Do you ever actually do the thing where you're covering your ears and trying to sing a song so you can't hear or know something? Have you done that in the last 5 years?
The last 5 years, I don't think so. I'm trying to think. Like it wouldn't be with another human being. Could it have been that I was
right?
It would be maybe sports related. It would be like on one of the days that I'm trying to tape one football game so I can watch another one live.
It's like the TV's on in another room. You can't get to it.
Yeah,
it's
that's,
like it's just being sort of imposed upon you.
You know what? I'm getting some really strong zip it up vibes, which is kind of a noise that I might make, which is also kind of close to scatting. But I wasn't trying to make a scat joke there. Like I think that I'll kind of do that, go loud and high, and almost like...
I do Star Spangled Banner. Say, can you see by dawn's early light? Like, I start, but I'm not even singing it. I'm reciting it loudly with my fingers in my ears. And again, this is not an every day or week occurrence. This is probably once every 5 years. But if suddenly, like if I were taping a Seahawk game and we were in the car and Kerry turned on the radio and the person was starting to say the score, I would instinctively plug my ears and start singing the Star Spangled Banner.
That's why everybody calls you the most patriotic man in Bellingham. Who's that guy who just goes around singing the Star Spangled Banner? And he just like he blocks out the rest of the world. That's how much he's into it.
Okay. Let's get down to brass tacks here, Andrew.
Okay,
I'm going to ask you a question. No. I'm going to ask you a question. I did not intend on bringing this up because I feel mildly embarrassed about this.
No.
It's related to this article. And I feel like I'm already like if I thought my scat singing was giving me flop sweat, this is going to be much worse.
Oh,
so
no.
I thought this was a really great article written by this reporter, Rebecca Jennings. She mentions in the article, she says, she goes, some disclosure. I have read every Harry Potter book at least 10 times. But these books are not nearly the extent of my repeated hedonic experiences, as the researchers would call them. Since starting to write this piece, she writes, I have listened to a single song on loop, repeated for such an extended duration that it is basically the same thing as silence. I read that, Andrew, and that resonated with me so hard because I do that all the time. I'll put a song on for a day, sometimes 2 days, and just there's some kind of weird self-soothing that's going on. Here's what I did that I feel embarrassed about. This reporter, her email address is posted with her bio at Vox. And I went and I emailed her and I asked her, hey, what was the song that you were listening to for an entire day straight?
Yeah.
I feel embarrassed about this because this is right on the edge of being a reply guy. Like, I did not do it in a public place, although I'm now talking about it here. And of course, there was nothing in the email that was in any way, I hope anyway, coming off as creepish, other than asking for a piece of information that was left out of the piece, maybe intentionally. Let's see. Oh, I sent it from my other computer. I was going to read you verbatim what I said. But my memory is I said, really great piece in Vox. I also tend to re-listen to things over and over again or whatever. I'm just curious, what was the song you were listening to on repeat? And also, of course, no pressure if you left that out intentionally. Thanks. That was like what
that
I wrote.
Sounds fine.
But I don't think I've ever reached out to somebody, unless I was a radio producer and trying to get somebody on to do an interview. It is really not my style to initiate a conversation mm-hmm. with a woman who I do not know mm-hmm. via digital means. And I immediately regretted sending that email because I just thought it seems like that just seems weird.
I don't – I'm not going anywhere with this, by the way. I'm honestly not. I don't know if it's better.
Do we ever?
But I'm curious. Did you leave your signature on it where it says like you're affiliated with like CBS and TBTL?
Nope. I intentionally deleted – I have an auto signature that says job stuff, which I have on there mostly in case I'm trying to like seem legit to a PR person, which has so far a 0% success rate, as you've noticed from my complaining off air about – how much I don't like PR people. But I took it off because I guess I just didn't want, I don't know why I took it off. Maybe it would have been better if I left it on because then it would have been like, hey, we're a couple of media professionals interacting. Maybe I was trying to low key that. So it didn't, I don't know what I was trying to do. I just feel I have very complicated feelings about sending that email.
I guess I sort of understand that. I have reached out to people before. I feel awkward about it. There's actually two different local journalists who I appreciate and have reached out to in various ways. One has never responded to me, and that's totally fine. And when I do that, like one time, she's somebody who writes a lot about city council stuff. She just really gets in the weeds on stuff, and I appreciate it. And I realize that I'm always going to her site. She's an independent journalist, and I always go to her site when I'm going on the radio to talk about something because I want to get – like, because I kind of trust her research more than just like somebody – who just like takes the headline and blogs it. So I've sent her a couple of notes just saying, hey, I just want you to know, I really appreciate your work. I consider it to be like a good resource for me. And that's important to me. She's never responded. And I think that's totally cool because I'm not expecting a response. For this woman, I'm trying to put myself in your shoes. I might have said, hey, love this article. I will probably be talking about it on our podcast later today. Out of curiosity, would you mind sharing what that song is? I might have just treated it more like a media thing because it is. I mean, I'd be interested in knowing now. She hasn't gotten back to you, obviously, right?
No, has not, and maybe won't. Yeah, I guess that probably would have been – that would have made it more professional. I guess I didn't want to seem like I was trying to be like I don't know, acting like I was some more important person in her inbox than I was. I just – this was just out of personal curiosity, really. But and to the people that are hearing this right now and are like, particularly maybe guys who are like, dude, get over yourself. You send an email, it's NBD. I think it's hard to overstate how much bullshit women, generally speaking, how the onslaught of attention and reply guy-age-ness, which is I'm only recently becoming aware of. That's the thing. Like, because I happen to follow a fair number of women on Twitter and there was a period of time where a lot of what they were tweeting was about just what slides into your DMs or what when you're on the internet and you're a woman. Again, this is not exclusively for women, but it tends to be directed at women. If you're on the internet and you're a woman, you're like in the world's biggest singles bar that you didn't ask to go to, it seems. And people just constantly, men generally speaking, just constantly are hitting you up with weird shit. And so I think having just learned about this world, I'm super worried about accidentally becoming part of the downside of that world.
Especially because you read stories about how things can change on a dime. I'm going to give you an embarrassing example, but of kind of my own. But like, you know, we were reading about an example that was in the papers here about, what, 6 months ago or something, maybe more than that. How many times – drink every time I say about 6 months ago, maybe more, because I feel like I say that once a show. Don't you drink, Luke. I'm not trying to
too late.
Push you out of the wagon. on the wagon, I get that confused.
There's no more room in this wagon.
But my point is, you hear about these stories. Like, there was one story here locally about a real creeper guy who's just like a journalist who was talking to another journalist. And he reached out to her. They're DMing via Twitter. Everything's fine. And then all of a sudden, boom.
Oh, yeah.
Just like that, left turn. Like, real gross, real awful. Like, just and just like left turn. And like, so, and that's something that, yeah, like, I don't think that I really had, I didn't have much of a realization of just like kind of how nasty and how quickly things can turn. So I was actually texting. This is a true story. This is the embarrassing part for me. I was texting. This is going to get slightly blue, by the way. So kids, turn up your radio. I was texting with a friend of mine. She's a woman. I consider her to be, you know, like a real friend, not an acquaintance, a real friend, but she lives in a different part of the country. I don't see her all that often. And we were talking about something. I don't even remember what it was. And then I said something about a boner. And, like, literally, I used that word, like, something like, and I don't know exactly how I said it, but, like, we're texting back and forth. I said that this is not somebody who that, you know, she's, I guess the listener just has to trust me that in our mm-hmm. parlance, this is not usually something that would be problematic or that she would blanch right. at, and this
Houston,
is a real friend.
We have a boner.
Yeah. And, but then there was, like, a couple, or at least it felt to me, like, after I sent that, I was like, wait a second, how does that come off? Like, this is somebody that the majority of our interactions now are via text. So I was like, is she taking a long time to respond? And I just wrote back quickly, by the way, that was I somehow clarified my text. I'm like, I was talking about this other person, like, things haven't, I'm not being weird here. And she was just like, yeah, I know. like I almost made things weird by saying that, but it, like, I think I did that because I realized that it seems to me, maybe I'm only basing this on a couple of stories, but women will just be in a conversation, a digital conversation with somebody, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, boom, just like that, things get really weird really fast. And so I want to make sure that even if I'm texting somebody, maybe who I don't know that well, like this reporter, that you're not reaching out and the first five email exchanges are fine and the sixth one is terrible.
I'll tell you, I'll give you a version of that story that was kind of funny. I was texting with our colleague and dear friend of the show, P. Fletch, Phyllis Fletcher.
What's your name? Fletch. Full name?
Fletch. And she and I are both.
What's your name?
Whoops. Okay. Everything's fine. Calm down.
Oh, no, the more you listen to something, the more you enjoy it. That's what we're talking about.
Thank you for making my mess up seem relevant. And that's exactly what I was doing. So Phyllis and I often text about the Howard Stern show, and Phyllis is a completist about TBTL and about the Howard Stern show. There's nobody that I've ever encountered on the radio or in real life who knows more about the Howard Stern show than Phyllis, including people that work on the Howard Stern show. It's incredible. And so, I mean, if there's any topic that comes up, she'll know way more about it than I will. And I found out about this. There was like a funny – basically, they were talking about an old joke on the show the other day, and it was something from many years ago. They used to have a guy that would call in, and he would say – he would do an impression of Mother Teresa for some reason, and his catchphrase was, God don't want me yet, man. I got more feet to taste. I guess because Mother Teresa had been like kissing people, you know, kissing lepers' feet or whatever. But he would just say it in this really funny voice. God don't want me yet, man. I got more feet to taste.
Ooh.
So I heard this and it was you had to hear it in context. But I was dying listening to the recording. And so I then want to like interact with my friend Phyllis about this. So I send her a text. It just is like, God don't want me yet, man. I got more feet to taste. And Phyllis' response was, she goes, what if that was the one Howard Stern reference I didn't get? And she totally got it, but she just was observing that, like, what if that was the one? Because it's from years ago.
Yeah.
What if that was the one thing she didn't get? And out of the blue, I text her, God don't want me yet, man. I got more feet to taste.
Yeah. And you were saving that for when you guys were officially colleagues, too, not just friends, of course.
Right, of course. Yeah, were we friends, I guess it wouldn't have been illegal, potentially. But now that we work together, it's right on the line. Of course, she did know about it. We had a good laugh. But right after I sent it, I was like, I hope that she gets that this is a reference to something, because it was 100% out of the blue.
Yeah, although I mean, at least it wasn't something gross, you know, like it wasn't, there was no way that could be directed towards her, I guess. Like, well,
I don't know, I think, you know, I got maybe more feet to taste. It's always a fairly loaded thing to put in a message with one of your coworkers.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's fair.
Anyway, so I will report back if I hear back from Rebecca Jennings, who also wrote a great piece, which I only realized once I was, emailing her and kind of looking, figuring out like what she does for Vox. She wrote an interesting profile of curvy wife guy. Did you see this whole thing when it went around?
That was forever ago, right? Was that like years and years ago? I don't think years ago. Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe a couple years. The internet moves quickly now, I think. I don't think it's been... But she went and did a... Because now he's got a rap album out. She basically went and did a profile of I Love My Curvy Wife guy, which is just... I mean, that is a uniquely modern phenomenon. I mean, let's just be honest. Guys shouldn't be allowed to use the internet is what it comes down to, I think.
Unless, generally. I mean... Unless it's scat, like scat man related. You're right. By the way, I'm on...
Can you please clarify?
Yeah, sorry. I got more scat to taste.
Literally.
Know Your Meme. You're right. It came out in 2017. So you're right. It's only a couple of years. I was guessing it was like 2015. But I love this woman and her curvy body. Refers to an Instagram post by a man who claimed to love his curvy wife. The post drew attention and it was written about by BuzzFeed. And I love Know Your Meme, by the way. I know that that is the most middle-aged thing to say, but I don't care.
Yeah, man. I'd say twice a week have to go to Know Your Meme. Mm-hmm. I will Google, like, because I'll just see something, you know, we talked about this when it happened, but, you know, Stan curvy wife guy. Like, when Stan started going around, I was just like, what? You know, I'm constantly Googling, why is this being said, you know, true hit king, or just you name it. I don't understand it. That could be the name for maybe not just this episode, but this whole year of shows. You name it, I don't understand it.
Yes. What did you just say? True hit king? I don't know that.
It's something that they always say it in reference to Ichiro. Is he still going with Ichiro, or is he considered going with Ichiro?
I saw a photo of him, by the way. Sorry, quick sports thing. I saw a photo of him in Tacoma. Apparently he still hangs out at the minor league park there, Cheney Stadium. I guess he's there still a couple of days a week, and guess what he was dressed in standing outside the stadium? Full baseball uniform. He is always ready to go. He is retired, but he is still waiting to be called up. It is amazing.
Assistant to the regional manager.
Yes.
I mean, at this point, like, I guess, you know, it's what's nice for the Mariners. I listened to part of the game yesterday, unfortunately. What's nice for the Mariners is that, like, as they were saying, if you have a heartbeat and you're in the minor leagues, you're going to get a chance to play at the major league level now, because we have just gotten rid of almost everybody who can play baseball. And so now it's like it's a very good opportunity. Like, if you play for the Yankees and you're in the minors, you're probably not getting called up. But if you play for the Mariners, you're probably going to get a shot. So I guess that's good for them. I was going to say, what's the downside of letting Ichiro play at this point? Like, it would just be fun to see him out there. I guess the downside is he's displacing a younger player who is trying to, you know, make a career for themselves. But I find that very charming that he – you know what? This is a weird thing to relate it to, but it's kind of like that Mike Posner thing. What I thought was cool about that Mike Posner, whose music I wouldn't say I'm particularly a fan of, but I liked that he said, I'm going to walk across America, and he did it. He was in the midst of doing it when he got bit by a rattlesnake. When they said Ichiro's going to be special assistant, what was his title? It's some weird...
Yeah, I think it was like special assistant to the GM, I think.
And they made it up definitely just for him, and it was like, I kind of was like, you know, they're doing these weird machinations so that they can still have him play in Japan, right? Because this was like, not this season, but the previous season, they basically said, bruh, you can't really play baseball at this level anymore, but we don't want to totally get rid of you, so you can still wear the uniform, you can still go on the field after the game and high five everybody. As I joked, maybe callously, it was sort of a make-a-wish for Ichiro, but it was also so that they could bring him back this year, because they were going to play in Japan. They did that. But, like, I figured that once that was all done, he was going to be done with this, whatever his weird job is there. But the idea that he's down in Tacoma, kicking it.
And he's retired. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think at this point.
I like that.
Yeah, no, I do too. And I actually, you know, there a lot of things went wrong this year. But, I mean, again, it was kind of planned. I mean, I don't even know if it's right to say that things have gone wrong, but it's definitely been a hard year to watch the Mariners, because anybody of value they're getting rid of so that they can build a younger team for the future. And by the way, the fact that they're bringing up these kids, like Jake Fraley just came up, that's why I saw the picture of Ichiro. It was a photo of Jake leaving Cheney Stadium because clearly he had been called up and he was going to be appearing with the Mariners the next day. And you saw Ichiro out there in his uniform kind of slapping his back as he headed towards a bus or something like that. And, if there's a silver lining to this year, it's that, yeah, we are so bad that they're bringing in all this young talent who we're excited about, and we kind of get to see them come up and play a few times. It's almost like this is really faint praise, but when you get to see people like him come up, Justice Sheffield, one of our pitchers who's coming up this weekend, I think, it's like it almost turns the major league ballpark into a minor league park because we get to see these young kids, which is kind of fun. And as eye-rolly as I was about the Ichiro thing last year, their plan to keep him around so that he could do this like final Japanese tour, let's call it, play a couple of games in Japan, and then just be celebrated like a GD king, like he's royalty, which he totally deserves, and
like
then
the king of Israel,
and then drops his mic and or drops his bat, drops his cleats. Well, he didn't drop his cleats, he's still wearing those. I think that they played that really well. I really do. I'm glad he got his moment, and I'm kind of glad he's retired now. I think it makes sense not to let him just like kind of drag through the season and just have an abysmal batting average. Like, he got to do his victory lap and then end on kind of a high celebration note.
We talked about this at the time, but I remember when those games in Japan happened, I happened to be in New York at the time, and I was watching that game at whatever odd hour of the morning or night it was, and I was when he finally walked off that field for the last time, it was real dusty in that hotel room, I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. It was a kind of an emotional – and I don't get that emotional about players. I know we probably talked about this back when that happened. It's like – to me, it's like, okay, you did a thing. Good job. And now you're not as good at the thing, so let someone else do the thing. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you made enough money that you can support your family. I'm pretty kind of like not emotional about it because it's like, you know, great. You played a sport. I don't know. Are you – was that harder for you, or was that something more laudable than somebody who ran a Les Schwab dealership a Les Schwab location? They did a really good job with that, and they helped people keep their cars running. I mean, I don't know. We prioritize the sports things like they're so much more valuable, but – that being said, I was crying pretty hard when he walked off the field.
Yeah, and I remember I was kind of skeptical about the whole thing too, because I kind of share your emotions about a lot of that stuff. And keep in mind, I wasn't like some Mariners kid growing up watching Ichiro. You know, like he was a guy who played for a few years when I was still learning what baseball was. But that was pretty nice.
Speaking of the sports that you do follow, are you reading all of the Baker Mayfield profiles?
No, I'm not. I'm picking up. Sorry.
Really?
It's weird. I have been picking up bits and pieces. I know that he's blabbing like way too much. He's kind of out there being kind of a jerk, which I don't really love. And, you know, they better be able to back this stuff up.
I didn't think he was being a jerk. Is that what – are you hearing that on
not
the Roxino
in, not in
rock line?
No, I actually haven't been following that stuff that closely, just mostly on Twitter and stuff. He gave an – I'm not talking about being a jerk in the profiles, I think, but it was like – I think it was an interview. Maybe it was a longer profile that just published a couple of days ago where he kind of like
– yeah, GQ. Is
that the one where he openly criticized like the Giants picking up somebody in the
draft?
Well,
that's the thing though. He just said he was shocked. Mm-hmm. That it happened. He didn't say the guy sucks. I think his name's Daniel Jones, who's the quarterback that was drafted by the Giants. I think he just said he was shocked that it happened. But that could be – I mean, you can interpret that a few different ways. Like, I'm shocked that they made such a good decision. I'm shocked that they – you know. I mean, it's probably – the indication is he didn't think the guy should go as high. But he didn't really elaborate. He didn't say that guy's not good at football. He just said it was surprising, basically. But I think it's interesting. Obviously, we need to get to Blur's days. But – I think it's – I feel like, again, every time I try to psychoanalyze you, Andrew, I get it wrong. So let's just buckle up for this. I think that – I feel like you're kind of keeping some of this stuff at – are you keeping a little bit of this Brown stuff at arm's length because of all the hype going in? Is that giving you complicated feelings?
No, I think I'm lazy. Hold on. The quote, though – I mean, I do think the original quote was – I don't think he was like, I'm surprised because it was a good pick. I got the actual quote here. Some people –
he definitely wasn't saying it was a good pick.
He couldn't believe the Giants would spend the number 6 pick on Jones, who had a 17-19 record. Some people overthink it. That's where people go wrong. They forget that you got to win. Either you have a history of winning and being that guy for your team or you don't. So, you know, there's not a really great way to spin that. He's later said, and I saw some headlines like, Baker Mayfield claims he was taken out of context, which people always say.
I can believe that, though, because that quote from him, we don't know the things. This is what's happening now, everybody.
Sorry.
Listen, if you have a birthday message, that's fine, but you have to give us a gift, which is listening to this conversation before we get to Blur's days. I could see a world in which he's talking about that thing about winning. It comes down to whether or not you win or whatever. He could have said that a few minutes later, and that the reporter could have kind of moved it up in the conversation or presented it like it was a little more connected to Jones than it was. I don't think that there's any good faith interpretation of what he said as being pro Daniel Jones, but. Is that his name? I keep saying that, but I actually could be wrong about
that. Yes, you're right.
Is it Davey Jones? Is it Mickey Dolenz? Which one of the
monkeys
did they draft?
It's Mickey Dolenz. It's Mickey Dolenz. Okay, number six overall.
That is, you know what? I am shocked by that.
There are, you know what? Yeah. I'm going to go on the record, too, controversial as it may be, but I am also surprised they took Mickey Dolenz.
Maybe this just gets down to like the difference in the way you and I consume or the way that we get hyped for sport things, because like let's just say I was a long-suffering Cleveland Browns fan, and then the Browns were like looking like they were going to be pretty competitive, and they had this kind of superstar, emerging superstar quarterback like Baker Mayfield. I would be obsessively consuming all national coverage of him, and that's a part of how I would be getting excited for, like, back when this was kind of happening with Russell Wilson. You know, I would never miss something that, even though I find Russell Wilson to be a deeply boring person, I call him Mr. Sum Limited in terms of his creativity. By the way, somebody called him. There was a column about him that because when he and Sierra bought part of the Seattle Sounders or something, and they were talking about his kind of like, you know, his business acumen, and they said they called him Mr. Unlimited. And I was like, well, I'll be gall darned. It worked, Russell. You did it. You made Mr. Unlimited a thing.
I saw in the Seattle Times, right? I think I saw that headline,
yeah, I think it was
too.
Larry Stone,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah,
I was like, okay, tip of the cap, because I thought that seemed pretty pretty ham-fisted. All I'm trying to say is I'm surprised that you're not like obsessively consuming all Baker Mayfield content.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a psychological thing. Again, I think it's a little bit of laziness. The I've been flipping on sports radio, but even, you know, but locally, I haven't really been tuning in too much to the Cleveland sports stations.
Cleveland stuff.
They also locked it down. I mean, this is a huge thing. It was like, you remember I used to listen to a lot of Cleveland sports radio, like, but I would time shift it. I would download it later and listen off their website. And then I think I found some Reddit group that would tape like an entire 3-hour show and then post it in its entirety, which I prefer that other than like highlights from our show. But they really locked a bunch of stuff down, and they tried to put it all behind a paywall. It's called The Land on Demand now. And it's like, I don't know. The whole thing is just like, it kind of was like, I'm not going to like beg or pay to listen to some knuckle dragger scream about Baker Mayfield or whatever. And so I really just think it has to do with like whatever pattern I'm in right now. I don't think it has too much to do with my psychology about the upcoming season. Mm-hmm. I do think that I am sick of the talk, especially when I would be way more interested in listening to shows where people are kind of talking about what they saw at practice, who's looking good, what, you know, what's gonna, like, on the field stuff. I've never lived in a world where there's been so much Browns off the field s talking. You know, I mean, they have OBJ now, they have him.
Perceived confidence from the Cleveland Browns as an organization.
Confidence
basically.
And also with Baker Mayfield, cockiness.
Swagger.
And just like, you know, and that's fine. I don't hate him. Like, I don't think necessarily he's a Johnny Manziel, who I absolutely hated. Like, remember he came and like from the second that they said he was coming to Cleveland, I was upset. I remember talking to you about that in when I was living in L.A., I think that happened. You know, like Baker Mayfield, like I don't necessarily have a bad feeling about him, but I also don't like, I would never want to hang out with Baker Mayfield. You know, I would rather hang out with Russell Wilson than Baker Mayfield. Russell Wilson might be more boring and he might be a little dorky, but I do feel like he is who he is, and he's just a sweet
well that
guy.
Probably has to do with the bullying. Like, Baker Mayfield seems like the kind of guy that could, he seems like he could whether intentionally or unintentionally, start bullying you way faster than Russell
Wilson.
He's
just kind of a bro, yeah. And, you know, but again, yeah. I'm really looking forward to the season. I really am. But, like, I'm just a little bit done with, you know, I mean, the Browns are just so, I mean, it just seems like such a bubble right now. Like, everybody's talking about them, like, mm-hmm. like, and they're talking about themselves like they're the best, which is maybe a mentality that you have to get into if you're going to compete like that. I actually believe that, but like, I don't know, like the all the drama and Freddie Kitchens just being kind of a bit of a mess in some cases in front of the press, like, I don't know, just get on the field and play. I'm very excited for that. And you know where I've been putting all of my Browns energy, this doesn't make me seem super cool, Baker Mayfield will definitely bully me over this, is I've just been playing the new Madden like crazy, and it's so freaking fun to play the Cleveland Browns on Madden now, which is an experience I've never had before. And if the season starts and the Browns get worse, you know, the game will update and the roster will change and the team will become worse. Like, they will use real stats. Like, if a receiver is getting bad stats, then it'll be harder to throw to that receiver in the game as time goes on. So right now in the preseason, it's just like nothing can affect the game. Like, it's just like it's the ultimate Browns team right now. And so and OBJ is just running these like crazy routes as he jukes back and forth, and like you can always complete to him. I'm just like, what world am I living in where the Browns, these orange pixels are throwing to the other orange pixels and they're actually connecting.
Well, this is also why I'm surprised that you don't watch Hard Knocks, just because it's, well, again, that for me is just that is the beginning of the football season starting, is watching whoever the team is. I don't even care. It could be the Tampa Bay Bucks, so I have zero, you know, kind of pre-existing interest in, not just for the amazingly bad turns of phrase, which I, by the way, I'm looking one up right now for you, Andrew. I recorded this, but I recorded it on my other computer, so I'm going to just try to needle drop this for you. Some really strong, bad wordplay going on here, which I'll hip you to. But also just because, like I said, I just enjoy Hard Knocks so much as just the kind of, I don't know what you'd say. It's like the sounds and the sights of it and the bad writing. It all just kind of it makes me, you know, football's back. The, what did we say? The crash of the helmet, the whatever.
The taste of the mitt, the smell of the ball. I don't know.
That's the one.
Yeah.
But you're not interested in Hard Knocks either. Or
I used
at least
to
you're
be,
not watching it. Also,
I
do you
used
have
to
HBO?
Be,
that might be part
oh,
of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I have HBO. I used to be. Oh, I remember the
well,
first
then,
one I watched was the, oh, dang, the Dolphins, I think. Miami Dolphins, maybe
sure.
About 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and I liked that one. And then I started to think that I don't know if my opinion had changed or if it just started to get worse, but it just was getting more and more hokey and not enough. It's only, like, what, five episodes, I think? Six, maybe?
Yeah.
And then, of course, I watched the Browns one last year. That was amazing. I mean, I watched those like they were the games. I think I watched some of them twice, so I got really into that. But there wasn't a huge pull for me to, like, the Hard Knocks, I realized, like, anything that comes out of it now, I'll just get that news from listening to them react to it on sports radio, or the clips will go online and I can watch it. Like, I just think that, like, the corniness of that show, and it just seems, I don't know, it seems like the show seems less real to me than it used to, and maybe I just have some sort of, you know, skeptic's eye, some sort of skeptical cataract. What? That is, like, making
show title or medical condition?
Yeah, that's a game we can play it on stage. I don't know. Like, I think the show is getting worse, but maybe I'm just getting more cynical. But it just seems
it's definitely
so
getting
much
worse.
More, like, everybody's so much more aware of what they're doing now. It doesn't really seem like a peek in on camp. It seems like a TV show more.
That's probably a good point. Let me play this for you. There, Antonio Brown is the receiver that, you know, very highly sought after receiver who signed with the Raiders. And they're coming out of a scene with him where he's looking up his kind of statistics of he's working with, you know, like a they each one of these guys, if they're at Antonio Brown's level, they have like you know, elite performance coaches that just they hire themselves to like run crunch all these numbers on literally like they have data on Antonio Brown, how fast he runs and how far he runs during a game and how that compares to other receivers in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's wild. But anyway, they then go let's see if I, of course, now let's see if this works. They go from that scene to our guy, Luke Wilson, former Seahawk, who's about to go out on a sea cruise with his dad. And here's some
exactly. So,
that's Antonio Brown.
We can check the details, see how he can get better.
Seems like smooth sailing for Antonio Brown. Tight end Luke Wilson hopes he's charted the right course as well.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Oh, come on.
Yes. Ugh. Quality writing. Luke Wilson hopes he's chartered the right course as well.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
There's a right way to rock and a wrong way to roll. You can just listen to your soul. Just remember that life is number one. You can be having so much fun. Just remember that life is much fun. You can be number one.
All right. I missed some Blurs Days last week, so I'm opening up my email right now.
Yeah.
I'm double-checking this. I don't see any missed Blurs Days in here, so hopefully this is all of them. I'm going to start this week with a couple of the people who I accidentally skipped last week. My apologies to these people, like Mark from Midwest City, Oklahoma. We're just talking about Midwest
Wait,
City, weren't we?
What? Yeah.
Mark says, I don't consider Oklahoma to be Midwestern. Anyway, Wednesday, this would have been last week, was my birthday, and I haven't converted anyone to listen to TBTL. So I have to write in and toot my own horn about my birthday and my birthday present to myself. I bought a house.
Whoa.
Happy Blurs Day. That's a great Blurs Day present, Mark. I love the show, and sorry for stealing the Sonics. Power out. Oh, that's right. They are the Midwest City Sonics now. I forgot about that.
Yeah, they are. I don't blame you at all. I don't blame anybody in Oklahoma City. I mean, look, we wanted to get the Sacramento Kings, and I would have been very happy if the Sacramento Kings came and played in Seattle, and that would have been us quote-unquote stealing them. That's just how it works. I'm mad at the high-level people who let it happen, but I am definitely not mad at... What's the listener's name again?
Mark.
I'm not mad at listener Mark at all.
No.
I got nothing but love for you, Mark. But I... Well, what does he think? Oklahoma's not in the Midwest. I guess it's because it's too far south.
I guess so.
I mean, it's I guess the south? The mid-south, maybe?
Let me ask you this, though. As much as... Like, I'm with you. You don't want to, like, make people feel bad, like the fans of another city, but I do. You mentioned this on the show the other day, how Danny O'Neill on the sports station and longtime friend of yours just revels in any pain that Thunder
she
fans
drinks feel. Their tears.
Yes, I
he
do enjoy
drinks
that.
Their tear shake. Yeah,
like when he just bleeds on the page like that and just like and just taunts them. I do love that.
Well, when there's a back and forth going, I appreciate that. So when you know, the Oklahoma fans are giving as good as they're getting, you know, they're like mad at Danny and they're shit talking him and he's shit talking them. That I'm cool with. But like, you know, listener Mark, God bless, you know, just a kind TBTL listener, newly minted homeowner. You know, I don't want to go after him over this basketball team, even though he did apologize to us. Apology accepted, Mark.
That's right. Do us a favor and take the Mariners, too. Nicole says, I'd like to send a happy fourth Blurs Day to my five, Hudson Hawkins. Now, I don't usually use last names, but Hudson Hawkins is a great name.
Come on.
You used to love the movie Hudson Hawk, right? You're a Hudson Hawker.
Would you like to swing on a star? Bo-do-do. Carry moonbeams home in a jar. I love that movie. That kid's got to be named for that movie, right?
I hope so. Anyway, I also skipped this last week, so my apologies to Hudson. My apologies to Nicole. Nicole says, Hudson and
he's
listen.
Named for the Hud Hawkins proxy. That other is a pretty good film. Well,
The Hud sucker. Yeah. Hudson and I listen to TBTL every day together and will be at your Orlando show if it's all ages.
Oh, man.
Happy birthday, Hudson. Did you poop? It's all ages, right?
Yes.
Orlando.
Orlando is going to be all ages. Hey, on the subject of which, and I know we're in the Blurs days right now, but just another reminder that tomorrow we are going to put out at about 2 o'clock West Coast, or as close to that as we can get. We are going to – there's going to be a link that goes live on TBTL.net, and there will actually be three links. There'll be a link to the Orlando show to buy tickets, to the New York show to buy tickets, and to the Seattle show. And you're going to want to jump on that. You're going to buy those tickets early and often because they probably will sell out, and we know some people were – bummed in the past about the Vanniversary show that sold out pretty quickly. So if you are one of those folks, jump on that on Friday.
Yep, that'll be
tomorrow.
That's
when that's coming out.
And we'll on tomorrow's show, we'll be announcing what those venues are, and we have some exciting news, I think. Are you
yes,
trying to
do.
You don't want to oversell it a little bit. I'm very excited about it.
You know what I was really thinking was, there's honestly, what you heard going on in my brain was, I was going into this mode of like giving the listeners all these tasks and instructions to do. And then I was like, too many tasks and instructions. Because there was that whole thing about we were trying to get some calls for show we're taping on Saturday.
We got into
I never
color.
Brought that up at the beginning of the show.
Right.
I feel like I'm just muddying the waters. So.
Let me just say this. For those who are still listening here in the middle of Blur's days, just if
it's
you have
post-
any kind
Browns
of
talk pre-Hudson Hawk
yeah,
conversation. For
right.
those of you that are here for that.
This isn't exactly the message you were going to throw out there, but this is a message I'm going to throw out there, and if you want to correct it or change it, that is up to you, Luke. But I will say this. We are going to do a live show at the Thing Festival on Saturday. We're going to do some sort of an email-vmail segment at the end of it. I don't have a huge like theme going into it. I just want to hear from people who have anything to say that could be interesting if played in front of a crowd. So if you have anything
right.
that you've been wanting to just get off your chest, you can leave your name. If you want to do some sort of anonymous thing, since we will be having Riz Pethard on, feel free to do some anonymous stuff, like whatever. But if you have anything that you think would be enjoyable to hear in front of a crowd of people who are maybe hearing TBTL for the first time, leave that content on our voicemail line.
Right.
Is that in 206?
We get a lot of voicemails.
Go ahead.
Yeah, do that. Why don't you list the number?
All right, 206-414-8285.
Now we know what the delay is on the line.
It's all good here.
But I was also going to say that like we have a lot. It's great. The relationship that we have with you, the tens of listeners, is so heartwarming and great because for one thing, a lot of you feel like the voicemail line is a place to just call and check in or kind of just, you know, just say howdy doody. And that's all great. And we love those messages. I love them because Andrew's the one that has to listen through to all of it. But I think what you're saying, Andrew, is if somebody has a story they want to share, particularly anonymously, something that they think would be interesting, or just something that – imagine you've walked over to the Wheeler Theater at Fort Worden. You're sitting in a chair. You don't know a TBTL from a TGIF, and you're just listening to a voicemail. What would capture your ear as a person in that theater at Thing Festival? If you've got a voicemail message that might – accomplish that, go ahead and call us at 206-414-8285. TBTL.
Right. That's right. And I actually have a handful of voicemails that I see are in the box now that I haven't checked yet either. So maybe some of those will work as well. But let me, if I may, get us back into this Blurs Day.
Yes, please. That's on me.
No, that's good. You need to do that. Matt says, will you please give a shout-out to my wife, my best friend, and my TBTL daddy? I told you, only one Blurs Day. Oh, wait, no, it's all the same person. It's Rachel in Westminster, Colorado. I am the worst husband, Matt says, because I forgot the birthday shout-out this year, but Willow from Oregon saved me last week and gave her a shout-out. Thanks for that, Willow. Love you, Rachel, and the whole TBTL family. That's from Matt. To Rachel.
You want to throw down on being a lame husband, Matt? I'll meet you anywhere, anytime. Pistols at Dawn.
Weird challenge.
Listen to this guy.
Nobody wins.
I'd like to send a happy Blursay shout out to two very special tens, the longest co-bro of my life, my wife, Julie June, and my actual sister, Adrian, whom I introduced to the show. But don't worry, I'm not going to mention what that would make me. They are now tens than me because I've had to declare bankruptcy often. But hey, at least I got these two to fill in for me. Who's that from? It's from Dylan, the imperfect 10.
Oh, that's an interesting category.
Dylan is shouting out to Julie June and Adrian. And Dylan, come on, man. Get back on it. Like, we only release 3 hour shows once a week.
How many times a day or a week do you think Adrian gets a yo, Adrian?
Too many.
Although, is one too many?
Yeah, I mean, depending on their generation, too, I don't know how old any of these folks are either. So, I mean, it may just, that might be something that is just kind of like, you know, the reference is just getting so old, right?
Wynn's wife is named Adrian.
And oh, yeah.
Every time I say her name to him, I have to stifle the urge to say, yo, Adrian.
I'm sure he appreciates it. I would. Do you ever get in debates about what is a classic? Rocky is a classic, right? Rocky will forever
be a classic.
Well,
how do you define a classic?
I don't know. That's what I'm getting at. One time I referred to the original Superman as a classic, and Genevieve thought I was off my rocker. Hmm.
I think that our Rocky is inarguably a classic because I think it, again, whether you think it's a good movie or not, it is so iconic, and things from that movie have become such a part of the pop culture of America. I mean, I was just in Philly doing Wait a couple months ago, and the bus that we were on going to the venue took us right past the library there and the steps, and people were running up the steps, and there's a Rocky statue. It's like anybody who runs up steps thinks about Rocky at this point. Like if you're running up like the steps of any kind of municipal or town building, you're like, yeah, Rocky. If you get to the top of steps and you celebrate, you're thinking of Rocky. If anybody cracks eggs into a glass and drinks them for breakfast, please don't do that. They think, you know, it's just, it's, I don't think you can argue it's not a classic. And then, like you said, Andrew, or like I think you were thinking, it's not even a question of is it a good film or not.
Yeah, although Genevieve may have a point. I remember it was years and years and years ago that Genevieve and I got into
that she had a point.
What I will refer to as the Superman argument. I've actually maybe come around a little bit more. I do wonder if Superman is a classic. It's a pretty cheap, janky film. I mean, I guess Superman as an icon is a classic, obviously, but maybe calling the first Superman movie with Christopher Reeves is, I don't know if it's a classic or not. I don't know.
I don't think it's a classic either. I think what it has going for it was, it was probably the first Superman movie in color, right?
Oh, I would assume. I mean, for me growing up, it was the Superman movie. It was the only Superman movie.
Right. Well, George Reeves was the original, was it on TV?
I think
Superman
that was TV,
or something?
Yeah. I do remember seeing some reruns of that growing up.
So I think Christopher Reeve Superman, it was a big deal because it was the first time that the Superman had been rendered in color on the, you know, movie screen. So it looms large in all of our minds. But I'm with you. Like, there's a question as to the filmmaking. Is it really like, let me put it this way. Batman, Michael Keaton, Batman, directed by Tim Burton, classic, right?
I don't know. Honestly, I mean, I love that movie. To me, it's classic. But will it go down in history as a classic film? Godfather?
I think it's classic because it was – I'm sure there's somebody who will correct me on this. But as far as my memory goes, it was a real departure as far as grime – in those films.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was grimy in a good way. Like, I mean, it's Tim Burton made it, so there you go. Like, that, it was this grittier version of a superhero movie than I'd ever seen. Because, let's think about this. And I know they were made in different eras, but put that Batman movie up against the first Superman movie. And just think about the color, the sets, the backdrops, the comical nature of Lex Luthor trying to get into a hot air balloon or whatever. You know what I mean? It's just not, those are not the same kind of movie to me. And I think of the Batman movie as being a classic.
Yeah. Hey, before I get back to these Blurs days, I have a question for you. It's Blurs Day related, yeah. though. Is the town in California Camarillo or Camarillo? Because yes. sometimes Camarillo. They mispronounce those things, but this one is pronounced correctly, Camarillo, California.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Then let's get back into this. Jana.
Just making sure that was still working.
In Camarillo. No, Jana in Camarillo, California is offering a shout out to her five, Elliot, who just turned 12. He's a reluctant listener, but loves the drops.
What?
Loves the sound machine. And of course, loves the epic bass drop in the Blurs Day song. Elliot's one of the
Scatman's world.
Elliot's one of the coolest that has ever lived, and truly knows the right way to rock.
I guess, except he's a reluctant listener.
I trimmed it down a little bit. The original message did say something about the fact that he seems to be coming around these days. That he actually asked for it in the car the other day.
We'll allow it.
So happy Blurs
Day. Birthday, Elliot.
That's right. Okay, I only got one more here. Let's clear our palette. Okay. Rachel says, I messed up and I didn't let you know it was my 10's birthday last week. A lot of people messing up or asking for forgiveness this week. I guess this was
something I was supposed
to do as a good girlfriend. Will you please give Jordan a birthday shout out from me and 11 who is not that in the loop? Jordan is constantly trying to convince me to listen to TBTL, and he thinks it's funny that early in our relationship I had to actually shout at him, yes, I effing know who Luke Burbank is. Anyway, he loves the podcast, and maybe someday I'll actually listen. Thanks much.
That's
Rachel.
That's very sweet. What was the name of Jordan's partner?
Rachel. That's from Rachel.
Rachel, that's awesome. Thank you. I know this is a weird world that Jordan is trying to foist upon you, and I apologize. And that's very sweet of you to go and email us and basically engage in this world because you know it will make Jordan happy, even though you find it to be kind of questionable. And that, by the way, is the right response to this show. It is kind of questionable.
I don't know, Luke. I don't know why you say this show is weird. I don't think there's anything weird about this show. Now let me swell this bass music. Nothing weird about that.
Nope, not at all. All right, I guess that's it, huh?
I guess that's it. All right, how about this? Can we go out with Scatman and Hatman?
Yeah.
That seems like a good... Because I didn't want to bump in with it in the middle of...
Yeah!
I didn't want to bump in with it after the first break because I sort of felt like that would get us back on the Scatman talk again. And I just, but like, let's just take a listen to this, if you don't mind. Let me start in the clear here for a second, and then we can go out. But let's just do a
sample. Somebody sent us, by the way... Let me just stall for a quick second. I mean, as long as it's okay with you, if I talk over the music for a quick minute. I want to find the exact email who it was. A listener... basically sent in a video of their kid dancing to Scatman music.
Oh, I've been meaning to watch that. Is that the subject line? Something like, this is my life now?
It's from listener Maylene. M-A-Y-L-E-N-E. I'd call that Maylene. Hey, guys, wanted to send along a video of the new daily occurrence in my house, all thanks to you. The scat rolling makes me lol when I'm listening in my car alone, but if my son Noah, who's 4 years old, is around... while I'm listening at home, he's instantly inspired to tell Alexa, play Scatman. And this becomes my day for at least 10 minutes at a time.
Oh, my God.
I'm thinking it might be time to explore some Echo Dot parental controls so I can stop living in fear of Scatman at home. Listener Maylene in Salem, Massachusetts. Oh, Maylene, I'm so sorry. But I guess what I would just say to everybody out there is, Alexa, play Scatman.
Scatman John. Now, is it worth playing the... I have this movie here from Maylene. Should we play it? I haven't reviewed this yet.
It's her adorable son dancing to some Scatman music. So
in
I don't think
background.
It really...
Okay, gotcha.
I don't think it adds a ton as far as audio goes, but my goodness, this is one adorable young person.
He's got
moves. Maylene, thanks for sending it in. And also, I'm glad to know that I can just holler play Scatman through the radio or through the imaginary radio and activate that on Alexas all over the nation and maybe even the world.
That power is going directly to your head. All right.
Oh, my God, Andrew.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Andrew.
Yeah. What's happening? Oh, Alexa, no, did you just...
Turn up the volume. Alexa, turn up the volume. Alexa, turn up the volume. Scatman is playing in the kitchen of my house right now because of me doing that joke.
Oh, my God. Is Carrie home?
No, thank God.
Oh, my God.
Are you kidding me?
You'd be in some trouble.
This marriage could not survive that.
No. Or
Alexa,
it would strengthen
it. I guess we'll find... I guess we're going to find out someday when that happens, when she is here. No, that was a total accident. I was like, what is going on in the kitchen? And what it was doing was playing Scatman. So, by the way, you don't even have to say Scatman John.
You know, everybody who's listening on one of those devices is not listening to us anymore anyway, because it stops our show. It's really self-defeating when we do that.
Really? It actually stops our show?
Yes, that's what people were complaining about when you were messing around with it in the early days.
Alexa, put TBTL back on.
They can't hear you now because it's playing Scatman's World.
Well, my Alexa's turning it on in the kitchen, so at
least good. We'll
wins.
Get some downloads. That's good. Here, let's take a listen to this. I'm a Scatman. Okay, so it's a remix of that.
And
yeah.
I'm the Hat Man.
Oh, that's Bega. Mm-hmm. That's classic Bega. Shorty, I'm not stopping
when I will like
tour. Have you heard this before?
No, no. Mix it up to the sound I've been seeing it. Just a can't be blocking. 20 years and more. Scanning Lou, I'm popping. Shake what your mama gave ya. Scatman and Hatman. Travel in time. Scatman and Hatman. Going on. Scatman's world. Scatman and Hatman. Do it in style. Let's go, go, go. You know, this song, the one that he's remixing
this
here,
sounds
sampling
familiar.
Here, well, this part is from the Scatman song.
Oh, that's from, okay, got it.
Yeah, and he's just sampling it. And by the way, that song, which is in that movie, I was trying to tell you, was in that Martin Lawrence movie back in the 90s, he was pointing out. I was describing it to our friend Nick Jarin over dinner last weekend, and he's like, oh, I know that song. Like, he's like, that is sampled so much still in all kinds of club
music.
Yeah,
Jessica knows that song, too. I was trying to make her laugh by sending her a link to Scatman's World. She was like, yeah, I know all this music for some reason.
Yeah. There you go. Anyway, this is Scatman and Hatman. This is actually new music. 2019.
It's actually not terrible. The Scatman stutters, but does and never stutter when he sings. But what you don't know, I'm going to tell you right now that the stutter and the scat is the same thing. Yo, I'm the Scatman. All right.
Scatman's World.
All right. That's going to do it. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all. This is Scatman.
Power out.